Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I have strong opinions about clothes, obviously, and I think that it's part of a feminine nature to want to decorate yourself.
Hi, I'm Kemi Sharia.
And I'm Monica Ainley. And you're listening to Fashion No Filter,
where we sit down with some of the lead creatives, strategic thinkers, and emerging talent around us to interpret the ins and outs of the fashion industry today.
Hi, Kemi.
Hi, Monica.
Where are we?
We're in NY to the fucking
sea. New York. Overlooking the East River, or is that the Hudson? I don't know. But we are very excited to have one of the most important people in fashion in New York on the podcast, I would say.
Monica and I came over to get some interviews, and we managed to secure one of the most exciting people I think we've had on the show, because the Met Ball is on Monday.
Yeah, and so we wanted to come over here because really important people are in town or doing some really important prep work for the Met Ball, because we all know the first Monday in May is a really big deal in the fashion world and in the celebrity world. And our guest today marries those two worlds.
Yeah, she stars so many people that we all know. Sienna Miller, Michelle Williams.
Margot Robbie. Rachel Weisz. I mean, some of the most feted, stylish celebrities. She is the brains behind that operation.
And we had a really interesting conversation with her, which went from everything from how she started her career working for Anna, what that was like, to how feminism comes into play when it comes to fashion and the Time's Up movement and all these different things. Proving that there really is much more backbone to clothes than what a lot of people often give them credit for. I loved our talk.
I loved it
Can't
too.
Can't wait to share it with you.
Indeed. So without further ado, we give you Kate Young. Da, 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 da. So why is the Met Ball so important to the fashion industry for our non-fashion industry listeners?
I mean, Anna's so important and Vogue is so important and the Costume Institute is so important. And it's like every designer gets a table and they get to dress a muse. So they really get to go for it. There's a theme. So it gives people a little bit more freedom to be wacky instead of always trying to look so perfect. And I think this is a little bit of a dead zone for awards. You know, like we're not getting summer movies yet. So people are hungry for some red carpet. I don't know. I guess that's why.
And why would you say that this red carpet is different to other red carpet? Like, why is it different
to Cannes? Well, there's always a theme. A goofy theme.
Right.
This year it's camp, right?
It's camp.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's so many celebrities in one place. Like, in a way that the Oscars isn't even. You know, like, the Oscars, they have to get nominated. This is like all different layers of celebrity. It's music, it's fashion. Like there's, you know, Lauren Santo Domingo will be there, and like Lily Aldridge, it's models and socialites and actresses,
Rihanna.
And Rihanna. You know, like it's all
yeah,
of those.
Yeah, everyone things. Famous who we care what they wear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically. And all mingling together. I agree. That's it's like the power of putting them all in the same room and thinking, whoa, she's talking to her. Like it's mad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that's what makes it so exciting.
So you're kind of known for connecting, well, celebrities to high fashion houses. Mm-hmm. And for transforming young stars into like full-blown fashionistas. I'm thinking of Selena Gomez with Louis Vuitton. Mm-hmm. That's your brainchild, right? So what's the technique? Like if you take a young budding star and you're going to start dressing them, how do you know, first of all, what style direction they should go in, because you're obviously cultivating this with, along with them. Like, mm-hmm. do you just see it in one flash? Or are you like, you are going to be a Vuitton girl?
And did they come to you?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it used to be before Instagram that a celebrity's PR person would hire me usually, and people didn't really know what I did. Instagram has been like a really interesting game changer for my career, because now usually celebrities hire me. Like, what will happen is their PR, if they're not super into it, their PR or manager will give them a list of stylists and they look on their Instagrams and they decide who they like. So it's changed my relationship with my clients, because they're actually choosing me. It's not this passive sort of blind decision. But it also makes it possible for me to show my work. Like, before celebrity styling wasn't something public, like, I had an agent, but they'd only put my editorial and advertising on the website. They wouldn't put red carpet pictures. So people would know, like, in a very vague way, like, oh, yeah, she dresses so-and-so, but they wouldn't connect things to me particularly. And then I think, like, you know, Rachel Zoe did this show, and people now know what a stylist is, and they see what the work is, and...
Would you say that Rachel is one of the reasons that has become more of a mainstream concept?
Like, well, yeah. I mean, she had that TV show. And I think before that, I remember, I mean, I worked at Vogue for years, and my family would look at me and go, what do you do exactly? Do you write? And I'd be like, no, I don't write. And for a long time, I was a market editor, and I'd say, like, the editor picks clothes, and my job is to get them and return them. And that sounds so dumb and simple, and it's so complex.
It's a real art.
And then when I was an editor, I was like, so I do the pictures in the book, like the front of the book, because I got a promotion and I'm not old enough to do center of book. And they'd be like, so you take the pictures. No, I don't take the pictures. Do you do the hair and makeup? No, I don't
do
that.
This is so familiar.
You know, it's just like this very confusing, I pick the clothes and sort of set the tone for the image, means nothing to most people. And then Rachel did this whole show about it, and everybody knew what it was. And was, you know, she's a captivating person to watch. So it made us all more interesting, I think.
I agree.
Definitely. As you've actually brought it up, because we were going to ask you this later, but so you started your career, if I understand correctly, right out of university, you were Anna Wintour's assistant.
Mm-hmm. One of, aren't there several?
Well, now there are, I think, four, but four. There were two when I did
this
it.
This is like induction by fire. How? What was that like as a first job?
Well, you know, I mean, I loved it. I thought that job was the best.
Yeah.
Like, I have a very weird relationship to that job, because I went to university, I lived in England for a while, and I hadn't lived in New York ever. I came here a lot as a kid, but I got the job and I moved to New York. I didn't really know my way around so well. I didn't have tons of friends here. I just kind of got this job and moved here. And I had a driver. My job was like shopping and like running errands, and it was divine. Like, she'd be like, go to Hermes and pick up 4 beach towels for Mr. De La Renta for a gift for when we stay at his house in the Dominican Republic. And I'd be like, yes. You know, like, I'm going to Hermes to spend $1,500 and they're all going to be nice to me. And I get to, like, swan out of Hermes with orange bags and get in my chauffeur-driven car.
It's every girl's dream.
You know, it was so fun. It honestly, it was really fun.
So Meryl Streep was exaggerating. She's not a...
Yeah, she's scary. She's very, like, minimal, you know? She doesn't say anything that doesn't...
It's what she doesn't say.
Yeah, like, it's intense. You have to be sort of okay.
On your toes the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you ended up working your way up through US Vogue.
Yeah.
And you ended up as sittings editor, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, like, something that maybe we could explain to people what the sittings editor does. Because potentially that was how you first... Was that how you first came into contact with celebrities?
Yeah, that's how I started styling celebrities. So I, in your questions that you sent me before, you asked me about photographers. And when I was an assistant at US Vogue, we worked with Herb Ritts a lot. And Herb Ritts loved me. And, like, we just clicked and got along. And, like, the big break in my career was that basically, we had to shoot some celebrity on Mother's Day or some like real deal breaker holiday. You know, Vogue is all women and they're all mothers, and nobody would do the shoot. Like, and Anna called Herb and was like, nobody wants to do the shoot. It's a holiday, or it was like 4th of July. It was something ridiculous. And he was like, well, just ask Kate. And apparently, according to Herb, she said, Kate who? And he was like, Kate Young, Tawny's assistant. And so that was how I shot like a center of book story for Vogue, because I was like, yes, you know, I'll work on Christmas Day if it's like for center of book Vogue. You know, I was 23 at the time, or 24.
Yeah, wow.
And that was the transition for me, that I shot for years, like every single picture that wasn't a fashion story in Vogue, I shot like people jumping rope, therapists in their office, like the lady architect of the moment, the like diet picture. Like I styled all those pictures for years.
Yeah. Yeah, so you really got to know people. And I think that's what this part of the job is a little bit, because it's different to styling editorial. For people who don't understand, like, the difference between putting clothes on a model and putting clothes on a real person is a really different thing, right?
Yes. Yeah, totally.
How?
I mean, well, that was how I got celebrities, is that I was doing all these upfronts, which are, like, the young celebrities who aren't that important yet. They're, like, the new up-and-comers, and I would style them, and they liked the clothes, and then I would loan them, I would facilitate them getting like a dress for their premiere. And so that's how my whole side gig of celebrity styling started. But, you know, real models are, you know, 5'10" and up. They're so thin, they're so young, and they don't have any, their opinion about what they're wearing is irrelevant. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And real people care how they present themselves. They have an idea about their own self-image. And usually they're not 5'11 and 105 pounds. You know, I mean, it's not, I mean.
So can you talk us through the whole process? So you would meet a young celebrity or actress or whoever it may be will come to you and say, I have all these appearances.
Mm-hmm.
So how then do you turn that into red
you
carpet
want to go
magic?
Back to the very first thing? So what usually happens is we like have a date. We have like coffee or lunch or something. And I ask them a series of questions about like, you know, everybody has weird quirks. What colors do you hate? What do you not show? What part of your body do you hate? What part of your body do you love? But then I also ask them whose style they like. Like in any era, at any time, because you have to kind of figure out people's own, what they're into.
This sounds so fun.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, you have the funnest job in the world. I mean, it's really hard work, but it also sounds
so
fun.
No, it's really good. My job is not, I mean, luckily I'm successful enough. I have a bunch of people who do all the shit work.
So
great.
Cool. Because your roster includes, I'm going to name drop here for you for a second, just so that people get the picture. Margot Robbie, Dakota Johnson, Selena Gomez, Michelle Williams, Rachel Weisz, who I just watched yesterday in The Favorite.
The best film.
And she is magnificent. Sienna Miller, Nina Dobrev, Sophie Turner, to name a few. This is like the biggest stars right now.
And apparently all those good needs is for Kate to come in and they'll be getting a big ambassadorship for one of the big I've heard on the grapevine that when a girl starts working with you, that's when they're going to be nailing a big deal with one of the
big fashion
the real
houses.
Fashion houses. Yeah.
So like, let's just take a step back here. So everyone, all our listeners are getting the picture. First of all, is it like, because I think a lot of people would want to know this. I think I kind of know the answer, but I'm asking on behalf of my sister actually wanted me to ask this. Are these women allowed out in public without you approving their outfits?
Yeah, I don't do street style.
Okay, ever.
During press tours, I do.
Uh-huh.
So promoting a film or something.
So when they're doing press tours is when you, if you think about it, if somebody doesn't have a movie out, you usually don't see pictures of them walking around. Mm. Unless they're like one of those people who are always in the tabloids, and I don't do a lot of them. So I do their airport outfits and their street style outfits we're doing.
Why are airport outfits photographed so much? Because you're just stuck in a crowd and
you have ever flown with a celebrity, it's like the worst.
How do they know they're at the airport?
Sorry, I sound really dumb, but...
I don't know, but I'll tell you that, like, when I get off a plane with a celebrity, there are usually 20 to 30 photographers standing waiting to watch them walk out.
Do you think the people on the airline tip them off?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'd never thought about this.
And do they get a cut for that?
I assume so. I have no idea.
Is that how
Yes,
works?
It must be.
It must be.
Maybe a career switch.
But I'm on planes crazy. The whole time. It's crazy. I feel like you start to understand why, like, I don't know, like, Alec Baldwin is beating up photographers outside of his apartment. Because, honestly, it would be enough to make a, like, sane person go completely...
No, you know, they like... So, with most of my actresses, it's pretty normal. But, like, with Selena, the paparazzi are crazy. Right. Like, I had an assistant who was, like, pushed over. Like, you can get physically hurt traveling with Selena very easily. Because it's like a mob.
Yeah.
And they push and they'll hit you with their cameras and they hit you with stuff to get out of the way. And it's scary. Like when you see people, I understand it entirely because it's actually dangerous.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time the people who are getting trampled are the people who are like the celebrity's best friend or their makeup artist who's been traveling with them. You know, when you go on a trip with somebody for 3 weeks, you really care about them. You're bonded to them. You don't want to see them get knocked in the head with a 50-pound camera.
Sure.
So, like, that's why they get upset. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
I listened to Keira doing an interview saying that, like, she had to, like, remove herself from...
Keira Knightley.
Yeah, because she said that, like, it got so bad for her, the paparazzi. People got obsessed with her. And it was just at the time where Amy Winehouse and Britney were having their breakdown. So the paparazzi got obsessed with getting women having a breakdown moment. So they would yell at them to try and get
That's
a reaction.
So
and
awful.
She said, like, I would walk out of my house and have all these, like, middle-aged older men screaming awful things at me, hoping to get me bursting into tears or something, because that's what was selling to the tabloids. And she couldn't go out in public. She couldn't do red carpet anymore because she was having so much panic attacks of having to be in front of cameras. It's like horrendous to listen to these stories.
Yeah.
But that's also why I think your job is so important, because to make a celebrity feel good.
It's like armor.
Because that is what, like, why it's so important.
Role to play. The clothes.
The clothes.
You know, like,
because people are like, why do you need to, like, because, like, the clothes become something that...
Yeah.
My armor,
I guess. It helps them be the public face of
them. Do you
them.
Talk about that with the girls?
Yeah, 100%. You know, we talk about the character they're going to play during the whole press tour. You know, I mean, anybody would do it. If you were going to... Even think about if you're packing for a holiday... You're like, oh, okay, I'm going to Puerto Rico. I want to be tropical. Like, I want to be like Chiquita
this.
Banana, and I'm going to get a yellow bikini, and I'm going to get this. So, like, I kind of try to get that energy around a press tour. Like, you might not know that, like, the whole press tour is inspired by this one moment or this one picture we have, but I want there to be sort of an alter ego who's part of the whole tour. And it helps hair and makeup to be on the same page. It helps everybody to have the same kind of vibe and gives them a part to play.
That's really
Do you have any crazy stories that you're allowed to share?
About what?
I don't know, of like something that's happened like minutes before a red carpet or...
Like any disasters?
I had a disaster where a dress was altered like 4 inches too tight and wouldn't close, like not even close
and
to closing.
And that would upset you so much.
Yeah.
When I try on a dress that's too small because
I've
grown out of it, I'm like, ah!
It was a disaster, but... It was a big dress, so we cut a wedge of it, and I sewed, like, this wedge.
Do you know how to sew really well?
No. That's, like, a terrible thing. If I'm sewing, it's a fucking disaster.
So you're about the skills.
Do they ever, like, change their minds last minute,
the
stars, and be like, actually, I hate this dress.
Yes.
What else have you got? Mm-hmm. But I presume you have backups.
I used to be a little bit more freewheeling with it. In award season, I tend to have one backup dress that I use all award season that they're so sick of seeing, that's totally safe and boring and that I know looks totally good. It's flattering and dull. And if anything goes wrong, they can always wear that dress.
That's smart.
Like, they won't get best dressed.
That's a good life
advice.
But
they won't get any.
Yeah, it's good life advice, though, to always have like a safe,
gotta have that
easy
dress.
Backup, no matter what you're going to. I now do this when I go to weddings. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I bring a backup of something that I know I feel comfortable in, just in case on the day it doesn't
feel
right.
Fat or you want your arms covered.
Or like suddenly you get there and like the vibe is completely not what you thought it was.
Or you realize that, oh, this is so awful what I'm going to say. That you're like a lot more fashion than everyone else there.
Yeah.
And so you probably should tone it down a
that's
little
happened
bit.
To me
I adjusted the way I was about to say that.
Oh, we're not chica.
Yeah.
Sorry, we're not
we're not
anyway.
Awful people. No, but not everyone cares as much as we do, that's all.
What do you say to those who say that it's not very sustainable to be seen every red carpet, every event, every time you're pictured wearing something different because it's creating kind of like an unrealistic approach to dressing for girls around the world?
People who say that should like focus on plastic water bottles. I think, I mean, we don't buy those clothes. Those clothes are all returned.
Yeah.
It's not wasted. There's no waste. And I think if you just want to look at drab celebrities all the time, like have some fun in your life. Like the whole point, they're the peacocks. This is like just about fun.
True.
It's not about anything more than fun.
I always think that I'm being quite sustainable if I borrow a dress from a designer for an event.
But the thing is, for the outside world, they can't borrow things. So when you're borrowing things because we have the privilege to have access to all these things, and that's why we have so much fun with our clothes, other people have to...
Yeah, that's
true. How the fast fashion cycle...
That's very reasonable of you, Gabby.
But, I mean, do people really think that they should live like celebrities? That's insane.
No, and that
you know what I mean.
I think it's
a
completely different lifestyle. It's true. No. I'm being devil's advocate. Just
I mean, I think that's like the problem with Instagram a lot.
Agreed.
That
I think social media
that we need to be living lives that are so exceptionally outrageous.
And it's not.
And it's not.
Yeah.
No, like my mother-in-law said to me one time, like, do you get jealous being in all these women's houses all the time? Like,
oh,
they all
really?
Have these, like, insane houses and insane lifestyles. And, like, I really don't feel that way almost ever. Mm. Like,
they're movie stars.
Yeah.
They're like what the queens used to be and princesses.
Yeah. It doesn't, like, I don't compare myself to them even a little bit. It's not realistic.
But that's probably why you're so good at your job, because not comparing yourself allows you to have that amazing relationship with them.
And objectivity.
I think I also care a lot less about stuff because I'm so surrounded by it.
Mm.
Like my assistant today was like, your jeans are two sizes too big. Can you please take a pair of jeans off the rack? And I was like, yes. And Sienna came in and she was like, you look skinny. I was like, I'm wearing pants that fit. I'm fat. I just got back from vacation.
Kate was just styling. Like, Kate was just styling through
Sienna Miller.
Sienna just before getting here, which I was fangirling a little bit about.
Hey, Kate. I guess you can't tell us what Sienna Miller is wearing to the Met Ball. Give us an exclusive. Well, I tried. You guys will see. Actually, this will probably come out afterwards. Sienna always looks great.
Thanks. Yeah.
Were you responsible for her boho phase?
No, I'm responsible for the removal of the boho.
The reversal
Although
of the boho.
I totally respect Sienna. I love your pirate boots.
Lol.
You can't wear them anymore.
Very London.
They were very London, and of that time, I remember I arrived at Edinburgh University like a couple years, a year or so after that Sienna Jude thing. Boho thing happened, and we only dressed like Sienna.
Yeah, same.
I mean, so chic.
Even in France,
yeah,
like where like those celebrities hadn't, she was the only one that somehow translated to French style because she was so effortless and cool. And trust me, no English celebrity, apart from after that, Alexa Chung, has ever really crossed over for French people. I mean, Kate, obviously, but it was growing up.
But she's so chic. I mean, she is so chic.
Incredibly. Yeah, incredibly.
Who are we talking? Wait, Kate?
Sienna.
Sienna.
Oh, Sienna.
And it's just this smile. She's just so luminous.
She doesn't need me. She just, I help organize things.
So that's interesting. So, like, there are people, obviously, who need you to just be calling in and contacting all of the houses and they need your address.
And an opinion, I guess, is one of the boyfriend when you ask and he says, do I look good in this? And they're like, yeah. And you're like, you have to look at me when you answer the question.
So in fact, you're just the glorified husband.
The boyfriend's always wrong anyway.
Always.
I
always
know. They just want you to look sexy.
Yeah.
It's true. Of course, in 2019, we can't really talk about celebrity dressing without addressing the Time's Up movement, which led to an all-black Golden Globes and BAFTA dress code. Was it all white for that? No, it was all-black.
All black.
Was there an all-white carpet at the Grammys? Something like that.
I don't know.
It was like there was another one that was all-white. It was black for Golden Globes and BAFTA.
Do you agree with the statement that clothes can truly make a political statement?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was sort of, I was deeply disappointed with the black choice when I first heard about it. I was like, ugh, they're going to look like they're in mourning. I think that it's women, like, I have strong opinions about clothes, obviously, and I think that it's part of a feminine nature to want to decorate yourself. Like if you look in cultures where people don't have anything, they make jewelry out of garbage.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't think that having an interest in fashion or beauty is frivolous. I think it's part of life and enriching to your life. So I felt a little insulted by it when I heard first about it. I was like, oh, they want to be taken seriously, so they don't want to participate in fashion. And that is an insult to what I do. But then, you know, when it happened, I thought it was deeply powerful and it resonated with people and it made a very visual statement, which of course I relate to, that was strong. So in the end, like I was wrong. But I think that it was powerful.
Yeah, it was. And how did you help? Did you change your approach when you were preparing your clients for this somber moment, or was it just, how did you make them look appropriate but striking at the same time? Did you have to like rethink your strategy a bit, or your strategy?
It's not really a strategy.
You know, I mean, black dresses are generally something I avoid because they tend to be quieter and it's really hard to photograph them and see the beauty in them. Mm-hmm. Like I think in real life a black dress is often stunning. The most magnificent, but On a red carpet, you lose the beauty of it. Bright colors are more exciting a lot of the time. And I think that, I mean, I'm trying to think who I dressed for that. It was Margot Robbie wore Gucci that was black, and Natalie Portman wore black Dior. I feel like I dressed somebody else in black too. And I think I just tried to do the job that I always do.
Mm.
I mean, at that time, there was so much politics going on. We had like all these ribbons. We had NAACP ribbons. Yes. We had the Time's Up pins. Like, it was a time. I think it was if you're a left-leaning person in America, it was a super dark period, and sort of everything felt politically charged. So I think
I'm interested that you're using that in the past tense. You don't think we're still in that kind of period?
I think we are, but I think right now we're in a cycle of hope. Like, we're all listening to Pete Buttigieg, and we're listening, thinking, oh, there's only 516 days left, or
what's
whatever.
What's next?
And at that time, it felt like, you know, there's, like, stages of grief. That was, like, shock and horror, period.
Yeah, sure.
This is happening.
Exactly. It just
and now
felt
it
nonstop.
Feels like we're all trying to, like, work towards something more positive now, at least in my milieu.
In terms of just on the subject of women and feminism, you know, I think you're an amazing example of a working mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really interesting the way that you transitioned your career, because you did, you were a stylist for Vogue, you did some commercial styling for brands, a lot of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you once, I think I read when you had your second child, you decided to go full-time celebrity stylist. I also thought it was interesting that you said that it was kind of like your dirty little secret.
Before.
Shameful.
But why? Like, is it because pre-Rachel Zoe it wasn't a respected career? Sure it was, no?
No. I think it was because I'm from a New York fashion editorial background originally. And even doing advertising was like something you didn't talk about. Like, we were creative people and you're creating really beautiful stuff.
That's why you're so good at your job. It's because you're from that background that you really stand out.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I mean,
I mean,
thank you. I think that I don't know. Dressing celebrities was sort of like, ooh, because we were. It was about editorial, and then, you know, when I had my first son and went back to work, I just wanted to like get the most bang for my buck. Like, if I was gonna leave him, I wanted to make the most money and get the most possible sort of result for the least amount of work.
So it's like, and your priorities shift when you become a mother.
Yeah, and I felt like I was never a wildly successful editorial stylist. I was like a moderately successful editorial stylist, and it was hard for me. Like, I worked really hard on it, and I never was like George Cortina. And celebrity styling has always been really easy for me. It's like completely intuitive. People ask me how I do it. I'm like, I don't know. I pretend I'm them. That's how I do it. I just know. Like, I just do it. It's easy. So it made sense when I was going back to work and wanted to keep doing it that I would pick sort of like the easiest road. Mm. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I wish someone would make a documentary about you. I mean, I'm just listening, and I just wanted him to see
Did
more.
Did you see the THR video?
No, what's
oh,
that?
Oh, go on YouTube.com.
Yeah.
The Hollywood Reporter did a video called The Magic Hour on me, okay. And I never like anything. Okay, and okay. I'm like, oh my gosh, I sound smart.
You are smart. You are smart.
Okay, we're going to watch it.
Yeah, watch that little video. But, your podcast has a lot of people saying they don't like the word feminist. I was like waiting for you to bring it up, and I'm very like disgusted by that.
I know, I find it really
whenever weird. I listen, hear people saying like
Alexandra
I don't
said
know
that
about
in the last
that,
episode.
She's French.
That
it's
word.
A very French thing.
And I'm like,
no, but that's French people.
I'm like, how can you not like? But there is a slightly different. So I live in Paris. Mm-hmm. My husband's French, and it's true. And Tammy was born in Paris. Yeah. Honestly, so languages go in different branches over time, and the word feminism has developed into a slightly different definition mm-hmm. in French, just to, in the defense of the French.
They've also been just not very good at
it. It's yeah. not that they're not egalitarian in terms of men and women. Mm-hmm. They think that men and women are equal if they're not stupid. But right. It's that they, in the past, like, 50 years, now that's turning around again post Me Too, and people are like, I am a feminist, of course, mm-hmm. French people, but it means, it doesn't mean I think men and women are equal and should have equal opportunities and women are wonderful for all these reasons. It means, it only means the aggressive,
right,
pushy kind of feminism. That is the popular culture definition of feminism.
I right. still think that that comment that she made was, I love Alexandra, but it's coming from a place where she is in a very good position, business, etc. So you have to be careful when you throw that kind of comment around when you're
listen,
yourself doing very well in a man's world.
Everyone's context for considering these things is different, you know.
I wonder if it's different in France too, because there's childcare.
France is the country that grants people the most support for everything.
Yeah.
Free medical. Like, if you have more than three
and
children...
And still they're in the streets protesting every day.
It took me leaving France and moving to London to understand how privileged I was to grow up there, how easy we have
socialist.
It. We have... It's a socialist country that pretends it's capitalist, but it's not. It's like... It's proper socialism. In a great way, it's like so many opportunities. Like, all culture is free. All, like, schools... State schools, better than public and private schools.
Yeah.
Free like help for mothers.
The
free
crash,
cleaners.
The
crash,
people who come to your house after you have a baby.
Is there
and
no
clean
free
it.
Childcare in the United States?
No.
Metro, the tube.
Because in Canada,
zero.
You can access
None.
It.
No, but yeah, it does.
Really.
It puts a very different
so
perspective on
there's a
on
lot
things.
Less to fight for. Yeah, exactly.
How can you work with a kid?
Well, you have a nanny. Which is not as safe as dropping your kid at the creche. No. A nanny is usually an illegal immigrant who's alone in your house, who's not someone trained and monitored by the state to take care of infants.
C'est quoi Chanson douce en anglais? There's a book that won the Prix Goncourt in France last year. It's this young woman who's absolutely brilliant called Leila Samani. She's written this book based on a horror story that happened here like 5 years ago.
I know the book, yeah.
You know the book.
It's called The Perfect Nanny.
The Perfect Nanny.
In France it's called Chanson Douce,
It's insane.
Which means lullaby.
I couldn't read that book.
You couldn't? See, we haven't had children yet, so we can probably won't be able
that's
to.
Not possible.
But it really makes you think about think twice about nannies.
Yeah, totally.
So vive la crèche, but yeah, also
exactly.
Where are we going with this? Feminism, important word.
Yeah, but I think maybe it's not important if you don't have those problems.
That's what I was saying. I think you know. I don't like the word if you're not. You're not suffering from discrimination or this kind of thing.
Right.
I mean, I because I worked in finance for 2 years and I was in an all male office, 9 men, all much older than me. I was by far the youngest, the only sort of like fun, pretty. My nickname in the office was TT, Tiny Tits. And I have a fucking sense of humor. I can take a fucking joke. And I remember the first few times I was like, ha ha ha, banter, England. After like 2-3 weeks of this, I started getting so depressed about it. And I internalized it so bad. And it's things that you don't really think about them until you're out of it.
Yeah.
And I got interviewed when I left that job. I got interviewed by the Sunday Times on switching careers. They were doing a really random piece on French people living in London. And I got asked to do it for, I don't really know why. And I somehow became friends with the journalist and said that to her in passing as a joke. She was like, oh, why didn't you like it? And I was like, oh, I didn't like my nickname. She promised me she wouldn't print it. It came out in the newspaper.
No.
The next day, the internet was full of articles about me saying, ex Clifford Chance lawyer accuses employer of sexual harassment. My nickname was Teeth. I was like, I am never getting a job ever again. I was 24. I was so freaked out by it. It has, and that has stuck with me because I remember at 24 feeling so vulnerable. Mm. I told the truth. It was like a silly little story and it wasn't even meant to be anything.
Right.
They turned it into this huge story and my immediate reaction was like, shit, I am never getting a job ever
again.
Right.
So has that changed now? Yeah. Do you think that today you would?
I think the Me Too movement.
I think the Me Too movement, I know people who work in Hollywood who say they are like not having any women on sets. They're not hiring any women lighting designers. They're not hiring any women PAs because they're scared they'll say something wrong.
God. But that's the American way. This guy made a joke, it got into the lift with me, and as a joke said, can I get into the lift without you like Me Too-ing me? And I was like, you did not just make that joke. Are you actually mad? No, they're flipping it round.
Yeah.
So they're just.
Well, men are very good at.
I don't know. I don't know. I had a whole conversation with a table full of people in LA who work on film, saying that like, all these movies are being made now, and they know that there are certain people who might be dangerous, and so they only hire men to be around.
Great idea.
There are more and more women producers.
Yeah.
So I think there is hope.
Yeah. So they can just Reese Witherspoon only hire women.
Yeah.
Fighting for the cause.
Okay, guys, it's time for the firing round, okay? Back onto fun fashion stuff after a somber moment. Kate, most exciting up-and-coming designer today?
Oh, my answer to this is Victor Glamaud, because he's my best friend.
Good answer.
But he is. He makes the best knits ever.
Very cool.
If you had to wear one designer for the rest of your life, who would that be?
This is so mean.
This is impossible. I read these and I was like, I'm not answering these questions.
I can't answer this.
I mean, I know everyone is so like, oh, Phoebe Philo. I fucking love Eddie's clothes. I bought a Dior Homme jacket a million years ago when I first met my husband. So like 15 years ago now, it's still in my currently wearing closet. Like I like to dress in dark, simple, androgynous clothes that are well cut and don't go in and out of style. It's like plain. It's the right silhouette for me. It makes me feel comfortable and at home and sexy. So.
Wow, 1 point, Hedy.
You're the second Iggy fan we've had today.
I absolutely love Phoebe, and I'm so inspired by her, but I am 5'3". I'm too fucking short for those clothes and that volume. Like, I would be panting watching the show and walk into the store and be like, yes, yes, yes. And I couldn't wear anything, really. I have lots of sweaters.
It's for girls like me that are very tall and lanky.
Yeah. And I die over it when I see it. Yeah. It's just like, I don't have that body.
Best dressed celebrity of all time.
Oh, Angelica Houston.
Oh, good one.
Yeah.
Very good one.
The most memorable show, fashion show that you've ever attended.
That's easy. Tom Ford, Gucci, where the lights went down and it came up and the song was Nothing Compares to You at like top blast level, and it started raining white rose petals and the girls had stiletto heels, and when they came back after walking down the runway, the rose petals were impaled on the heels.
Wow, wow.
And it was like the evening section of the show. Epic. Like, I wept. Best thing ever.
That's only we were talking about crying in fashion shows recently. It's like a rare occasion, but it's really meaningful.
I cried at Sonia Rykiel once, too. Like, one of her last shows where all her, like, grandkids came on stage and everyone who worked for the atelier.
Oh, I saw.
And they were all, like, dancing.
I was like, that made me cry. Yeah. I watched the film, like the documentary version of that. It was amazing. Le jour d'avant, Sonia Rykiel.
Yeah.
Where they did a surprise birthday where all the designers did like a version of her hair.
Yes.
It was insane.
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. You can find that on iTunes. It's really good.
I was sobbing at Chanel just in. No, you guys weren't crying at Chanel?
I shed a tear. I was sitting around.
I was very
people.
Shocked.
I was with the French press.
I was very,
and, like,
very, very shocked.
Beside themselves.
No, I was super shocked that during the minute of silence, the photographers continued to take pictures. You heard, or from the pit, like you could take, and I thought that was really disrespectful. A minute of silence is a minute of like silence.
Yeah.
And I thought that it really shocked me properly.
I've started getting teary when they had his voice when he was talking about the Queen at the beginning, and he remembered her saying that wearing his designs was like walking through a painting. I don't know. It's just he's just been through.
Yeah.
The history, so the eras. Anyway,
did you see Virginie's show this morning? So chic.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I'm so sad.
Always big Chanel fans.
Yes, very chic. Chanel. She's wonderful.
What is the best thing about working in fashion?
I mean, the clothes.
And the worst?
You know, I mean, shipping.
Yeah, also bad for the planet, so yes.
The most important event of the year is
the Oscars.
Okay. One trend you will never get behind.
Turquoise.
Oh, I hate turquoise. I'm glad
I
you
hate
said
turquoise
that.
So
but
much.
I love the sea. The sea is my favorite thing in the world.
Same. Mind turquoise.
I don't like it. It's like
I hate it.
It's unacceptable, I'm sorry. The other one I hate is cobalt blue. Because I associate it with, like, the only way is Essex. I don't know why. I shouldn't say that.
Oh,
but
amazing.
So you don't like Essex?
No.
I'm joking.
It's not that. No, it's like the look. It's the Daily Mail look of, like, you know, you pair, like, the blue dress with the blue shoes and the blue bag and the blue, and it's always
so
that.
So you don't
blue.
Like matching.
I don't like the matchy, 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 matchy look in that really
you
strong color.
You just made me think of something else I hate, which is a nude patent pump. Especially if it has a platform. Like, they should not exist. Yeah, right? They should not exist. And the idea that that extends your leg, whoever told people that, it's not true. It's a shoe. It's not your leg. Like...
I agree. I would like to just cast nude tights into that category. Oh,
I kind of have a love affair with them.
Really?
Yes. I have this whole idea that I want to bring hosiery back.
But I love other tights.
I know, but if it was like a good transparent nude with like a black seam up the back, you wouldn't wear it.
Though. Yeah, but I'm talking about like, Kate,
why do we
Kate
all
Middleton
have to go
makes
around?
Makes herself look older than she is in nude tights.
Well, but she wears ones that are like suntan.
Yeah.
I meant to make her look tan. They just look weird.
But it's if acceptable. There was a piece of hosiery that actually just was like makeup for your legs, so you didn't feel shy about like the inflamed follicle on the front of your shin or like the weird bruise on your ankle because you hit your suitcase.
At that stuff.
Really?
I
think
mean,
everybody
unless you're
does. I'm
Robbie.
Me, so I'm looking. I'm like, flaws, right, flaws. All I see is flaws. Like, if you could smooth it out without looking
I'm
like...
I'm very lucky I have... My legs are not my
flawless.
Issue.
Flawless.
the only part of my body that I like, but I do like them.
Great
so.
Legs. Check out Cammy at Cammy Charrier's pins.
Monica's got great boobs, by the way. Kate, I don't know you enough to go there, so I'm not going to make a comment.
You look great.
Body part.
And I'm sure you can pull off nude tights really well.
Great eyes. I'm staring at you.
I haven't found this nude tight that I love. I just like the idea of one that is good.
A good one.
Yeah.
Well, if somebody out there...
I know, like, Wolford, do you want to do a collab?
Yeah. What was our... Oh, sorry. Yes.
No, go.
One look you will never stop wearing.
A navy sweater and black pants, which I'm currently wearing.
Yes, you are.
Which I wear 90% of my waking hours.
But at least the jeans fit today.
The jeans fit.
We appreciate it.
Yeah.
We like it. In what place are you most inspired?
I think it's like a really... I have a super aversion to white lady self-care, but... I practice meditation, and I find that when I'm meditating, not necessarily during it, but when I am meditating very regularly, I have a much clearer insight into things and ideas about things.
I've been trying to get into meditation. I find it really hard.
Do a TM course.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'll go to the... Yeah.
Okay.
What is your favorite New York hangout? God, did I write this question?
My favorite New York. I mean,
it's good.
Oh, it's so awful. I'm like really getting into my white lady-ness. The San Ambrose on Lafayette is like the fashion ghetto, and I have lunch there multiple times a week. But then my favorite hangout really is maybe the coffee shop by my house where I have coffee with my best friends. Aww. Like this morning,
that's
like
nice.
Once a week.
What's it called?
Golda.
Shout out. What's the cause you most believe in?
Planned Parenthood.
Ooh. Me too.
You know, I'm so grateful that I had birth control from the time that I need it, and I don't have any children that I didn't want. And that, I think, is the number one thing that can change a woman's life and make it not about her own choices. Mm. You know, like being able to decide when you have a kid gives you freedom in life.
Here. Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
This question has been haunting me since I read it.
I'm
it's
sorry.
Like a life, that's
I hate
like
if
a
someone
life
asks me that, I'm like, fuck
question.
Off. So you can say fuck
sorry,
off.
Sorry, I
want four children and I haven't been single for 5 years. So
I mean, my financial planner always asks me that, so I'm really clear on like my fantasy. Well, but it's good because she's like, well, what do you want to do in 10 years? Do you want to be retired? Do you want to be working? Do you want to start a business? Because we need to plan. And, I don't know, like, I don't know that 10 years from now will be so much different from where I am now. My kids will be older, which is crazy to think about.
How old
about.
Are your kids now?
11 and 8. So the idea that my oldest son would be 21 is wild.
Wow.
But I don't think that's not, like, me quitting doing this. I like my job. I don't hate doing it at all. I think maybe traveling less. Mm. But, yeah, like, I feel very like happy where I am in my life. I like my job. I'm really like my husband and my kids, and we have a nice house, which is a total like lottery win in New York City. So I don't feel like in 10 years things will be so drastically different. Mm. I mean, I hope maybe in 15 or 20 to be living upstate and like doing more pottery.
Very good for headspace pottery apparently. Yeah. I've been told that if you can't meditate you go to pottery class.
I do ceramics all summer. Oh, and yeah. You know what's really good? You should take it up if you're addicted to your phone.
I am.
The thing that's good about it is it's so messy that you cannot touch your
phone. That's what I need.
And you can just listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
Like Fashion No Filter.
Before we let you go and get everybody on the best dress list on Monday, do you have any advice for young, aspiring stylists, celebrity or otherwise, things that you can tell people who are starting off and things that you would have liked to be told when you were starting out or anything really?
I mean, the thing that I always tell people is that
like when I'm hiring people for my office, and I don't know that this is true for everyone who works in fashion, I'm not super interested in people who know everything about fashion. Like, I don't really need you to know what Givenchy look number 23 is. I want you to like read books and know about art and architecture and maybe be into like cooking or horses or something. I like people who are full, and I think that your taste is better when you have a broader interest.
100%.
You know, like that. And I think that so much about this job is like being a good stylist is being someone interesting that people feel confident. They feel comfortable with and they feel they can connect to. And that isn't just fashion.
No.
You know, that's like movies and art or books, or it depends on the woman. But like, I talk to my clients about so many other things than their clothes.
Mm. Yeah, of course.
You know?
Because a person is so much more than what they wear. And yet it's such an important part of who you are.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. So I think that's like, that to me is like the key, is to develop like a very rich aesthetic sensibility in whatever way you have to get there, so that it's richer than just like this season or now or what's available or what's trendy. That's sort of not important to me.
That is
super
advice.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us.
That was so fun.
Especially
at
such a busy time.
I want
to
stylist.
So
I want to be a celebrity.
We should have done this at my office, but it's really loud. They're building a building across the street.
That's why we needed to get you in.
I'm going to be making a documentary soon, and you'll be the first person called.
That would be so... Oh my God!
Oh my God.
Okay, let's cut off the mic for a second.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Okay, I now have a full girl crush. Are we still allowed to use that word in 2019?
Girl crush?
Yeah,
I think you're allowed to say girl crush.
Wow, I'm obsessed with that.
I'm obsessed
with that. I'm
trying
to think up reasons for which I could, I mean, I'm not a celebrity, but could I have a...
Oh. We told her, we were like, can you style us? She was like, okay.
just talking to her about the whole process and the kind of things that she... It just sounded like such a fun process, something that I would love to experience one day.
Yeah, she's incredibly insightful. Oh. And it sounds really personal, her relationship with all of her megastar clients. So it means a lot to us, Kate, that you came on the podcast, especially on the eve, well, 3 days before the Met Ball.
And we can't wait to see what everybody looks like on the red carpet.
Yes, we'll be glued to the telly.
So
thank you.
Thank you. And we... Well, thank you to everyone who's tuned back in again for another episode.
Yes, and thanks to all who have rated and reviewed. Please continue to do so.
Absolutely. I have been very bad at keeping up with emails on the mailbox, but I will be going and looking on it today. Do continue to send in any suggestions, ideas,
CVs. Although I will say again that if you do want to work for us, you have to be London or Paris based. We have had so many applications from really, really interesting, cool people that live abroad, and we really need someone on the ground.
Yeah.
But anyway, hope you loved the interview and see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in. Bye. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for a little bonus. An exclusive Met Gala review from poet, rapper, and fashion PR extraordinaire, Sophie Roche-Conti.
Notes on Camp, by me. A human hamburger and a chandelier. A lawyer in a dress made of crystal tears. An Egyptian king held up by a dozen queers. And Anna Wintour had a thought. These are actually my peers. But how did she get to this place of regret after 24 years of toil in organizing this fete? Over 2 decades, she's been ruling the game, only to end up watching Hailey Bieber wear a thong with another man's name. Next year, may we be blessed with subtlety. Cashmere sweater sets worn by one and only Cardigan B.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.